32 of the Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and I never thought I'd see the day when a network once known for teen drama and angst has now become the home of karaoke.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and I don't know quite where to go with that one, so I will pass it off to John.
Well, if we're going to have karaoke, at least we're going to have karaoke with hot gingers involved.
That sounds good, but...
Yeah, in theory. All right. It sounds good. Eh, that was funny. Yes, we are going to be talking about a few different things, not the least of which is going to be the bottom shows of this week, the worst performers, shall we say, and then what I like to call our wild card shows, and then wrap it up for the week from there. But first, before we do any of that, Edmund, if you could give a quick disclaimer.
Certainly. As ever, we will spoil you silly as we talk about these things. We like to leave no stone unturned, no note unsung, so you will be hearing it all. But it's the end of the week, so you've had plenty of time to catch up.
One would think that you did, yes, indeed. So let's go ahead and start with the bottom performers for this week. And I, as usual, am going to skip the promos in particular because, quite frankly, these shows didn't deserve one. So let's go ahead and start with the third worst score of the week, and that would be Gotham. Yes, Season 1, Episode 14, The Fearsome Dr. Crane, Maroni's Tests Fishmooney's Loyalty, Gordon and Bullock hunt a killer who targets victims with severe phobias. Bruce Wayne confronts Gordon for failing to make progress on his parents' murder case. And this show came in at an average of 6.83. Gary, you gave it a 6.5, which was the lowest score. I can't really argue too much with you on that one. But what were your reasons for that?
Let's see. The flip, and no pun intended, the flip-flopping of Penguin with Fish is getting old. Penguin has flip-flopped with everyone so much and played every which side that while at first it was interesting and, you know, somewhat perplexing how he's able to outsmart all these other supposedly smart people, they're going to the well too much with that little trope, and it's no longer a genius thing. I realize they might be playing it off like he's just trying to survive, you know, going from one port to another, you know, whichever one will take him. But they've done it already 5 times, and we're on, you know, episode 14. It's a little too much, so that was a little bit of a letdown. Then this whole unraveling of Selina seeing the Wayne killer. It's coming a little too easy, I think. You know, she just, you know, made a statement that, you know, out of the blue that she, you know, she didn't see them, and Bruce accepted it as gospel. He's releasing Gordon from the pledge to try and hunt down the guy. Why? Just because Selina said she didn't see him anymore? That it just it rings a little hollow for me, the whole little plot line. And the villain, it felt like a monster of the week kind of thing to me, a little too strongly this time around. Sometimes it plays off a little bit easier, but this one didn't. It just didn't go down that easy, and I had a harder time sort of feeling where the villain was involved in the rest of the show, the episode.
Yeah, how about you, Edmund? Anything on this one?
Yeah, it. I think for me, I mean, I did wind up giving it an average, but it was as much because it was it's sort of on reflection and going over it. I think it was because I was equally. Well, I think disappointed is too strong a word, but because that would imply I cared more about where the show's going.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair because yes. That's exactly the point. It's average is saying that it's pretty much mediocre, right?
Yeah, and you know, because certainly I agree. The villain of the week was just a little odd, and the whole thing with Penguin being the master manipulator and now just getting jerked around just is ringing very hollow. And I think I wound up at a 7 because there was some of the stuff going on in terms of the Gordon romance and even Mr. Nigma's renewed fortunes that I was actually finding a little bit of interest in. But it was just that, you know, just this stuff sort of around the periphery. And even though it felt incredibly forced, even the stuff with Bullock and his new potential paramour. But certainly, you know, that should have just been, you know, background character stuff supporting a much stronger main narrative, and it wasn't.
Yeah, I really can't argue with any of that. I mean, that's exactly the problem that the show, again, I'll get back to the same problem as with the previous week's episode, that all this back and forth between Fish and Penguin weakens them both. And I think that this episode is a really good example of that. How could he possibly go on from here and have credibility? It's just, it's hard to imagine. And they're not really doing much to counter that feeling within the narrative. So, yeah, I have a hard time knowing or guessing where they could possibly go from here with that progression. And yet, that is the character that, for better or worse, is pretty much the only character that's working. And they're doing everything in their power to overplay their hand with him to the point of making him practically useless. All right, well, let's go ahead then and move on to what is the second lowest score for the week. And Evan, if you don't mind doing the recap here.
Certainly. This is Supernatural Season 10, Episode 12, About a Boy. Sam and Dean investigate when people suddenly disappear into thin air with only their clothes left behind. Their probe reveals that Hansel, from Hansel and Gretel lore, is kidnapping people and turning them into their younger selves to placate an evil witch.
Okie dokie. And I believe that this one came in, hold on, I need to change windows real quick, at a 6.67. You and I both gave this one an average rating, and quite frankly, that's pretty much where this show has been in the last two seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Right dead average. I don't know. Is this the new normal for Supernatural? I mean, for you, how do you feel?
I mean, apparently, because I mean, the only thing I got out of this was them trying to, we have this ongoing arc with the Mark of Cain that certainly had the potential to explore some of Dean's obsessions and backstory, etc. But instead, it's feeling like just the latest supernatural thingy that we have to track down a solution for. And this week, it was, oh, let's turn Dean into a kid, which means he doesn't have the mark, but then, of course, he has to transform himself back to save everybody. So now he still has the mark, and we're still not completely exploring the storyline the way we could be.
It kind of exactly my thoughts on it. I get the Dean is trying to find a way to survive or hold back the mark, but this felt like wish for, I don't know, it felt like it could have gone further than it did. And it would have been a lot more interesting. But probably what held back this one for me was the whole Hansel Gretel thing. It wasn't really necessary.
Well, John, as somebody who doesn't watch this series has been running for a long, long time, and you're starting to talk about a new normal where your expectations are much lower. Do you feel like they've tapped the well? they can't come up with anything new or fresh?
I think maybe part of it is that the people who are currently involved are struggling to find a new thing to say about these characters, which is really kind of odd because part of it may be that they've admitted they've been stretching out the storyline a little bit. And yeah, no kidding. That's what it feels like right now. So, you know, what that means in the long run, I'm not sure. Maybe it is a little bit played out in its current form. Edmund, anything else to say about Supernatural, do you think?
I'm racking my brain, and nothing. Actually, just thinking back to The Witch, the other weird new normal is apparently people doing really, really atrocious accents.
Yes, well, there's that too. Still, nothing is worse than Rowena.
Yeah,
so we should just keep that in mind. All right. Well, that brings us to what was the bottom performer this week. And yeah, no one should be surprised by this because we've alluded to it more than once. But again, this is one of these strange situations where if we're talking about Supernatural's new normal and maybe getting, if not comfortable, then at least willing to accept that this is what Supernatural is for right now, a more average show than it used to be. This show maybe is just embracing its, or showing its true colors is one way to look at it. And that would be Helix, season 2, episode 3, Scion. So, or Scion rather. Yeah. Why aren't you opening up? There we go. Yeah. Jordan and Peter travel outside the safety of the Abbey to retrieve some specimens and discover just what's living in the woods. At the same time, Sister Amy plots to take the CDC team or make the CDC team leave forever. And, well, I'll give them that much. Sister Amy is a lot more interesting than I thought she was going to turn out to be. She's willing to do just about anything.
Yes, indeed.
To achieve her goals.
Facilitate things, yes.
Yes, righty then. She takes things hands-on.
Yes.
But the thing with the kids was creepy.
Mm-hmm.
I will give them that. A lot of the rest of this episode made absolutely no freaking sense.
I mean, it just continues what has been set up so far, and you know, I mean, it was nice to have Hitaki show up again. Except I really wish it wasn't in. Well, once again, I mean, I really do not understand why we have to jump 30 years ahead, and not have the entire cast actually interacting in the same time frame. Because if anything, it just seems to be they are just giving away a lot of what's going to be happening in the present day storyline, and this is one of those classic cases of as much as I may or may not be paying attention, as I'm trying, I wouldn't say trying to follow because you can't follow as I'm watching. But this is one of those shows where I absolutely keep rewriting the scenarios, and the one that I have where it's all present day and it's all about Illyria and the Immortals and trying to extend their reach and power with our intrepid, not the most skilled CDC crew opposing them. Still feels like a better show. Not a great show, but a better show than the one we're being presented with.
So my theory here is that, not unlike what I've been saying before, I feel like when I look back on this and I think about the really discordant opening credit music and just how crazy things are in general with the show, maybe I'm just not understanding the point. Maybe it's meant to be this really just insane anything goes type of situation. Maybe this is Ron Moore just coming off and saying, you know what? I'm not going to even pretend that there is an actual plan to all of this.
Oh, you went there. I was afraid you were going to go there.
I'm just going to throw everything in a blender, and it doesn't even really need to make sense as much as be this really just crazy ride.
Mm-hmm.
And if I look at it in that way, it's not a better show, but it's maybe an easier to understand show.
My only issue with that is that does sound like a potentially fun show, but this show that's on the screen is still not that. If they were going to go just completely nuts do almost a show where they're doing the MST3K within the show. You know, yeah, that once again is a better iteration than what we've got.
I still get back to the example though of like an American Horror Story type thing.
Yes, exactly.
Is this where it's a level of self-awareness, I guess, too, but the show doesn't need to necessarily be entirely self-aware, but just enough to get past the what the heck is going on factor. But, like, I could see them being like, oh, hey, you know, it's kind of implicitly acknowledging that it's going to go way off the rails. So, I don't know. I'm having a hard time explaining this, but just to say that if you had a sci-fi show in the realm of American Horror Story, what could that be? You know?
Mm-hmm.
I guess, like, this show literally is that. at least in my mind. So it's just it's not American Horror Story. At least there's parts where they're kind of winking at the audience, and here they're not.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the issue.
Like implied. Like yeah. What is going on with the kids is creepy, and it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But go along with it anyway.
Yeah. You know. But it is referring to Children of the Damned, and you know, and some of that
sure.
past stuff, and maybe a little Lord of the Flies thrown in there too. Go with it and let us in on the joke more.
Yeah. Let us in on the joke. That's one way of looking at it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we have gone through what is our lowest scored episodes of the week. And now we have a little bit of time to go through what perhaps are other shows that we feel are worthy of discussion but didn't fall on the top three or bottom three. And we already covered Arrow. But, Gary, I'm curious as to what show you would like to cover.
Well, I think of the shows that we have left, my highest rate at one hand, I think it's one of my highest for the week, was actually the show that Bronson skipped on us, and I'm talking about The Flash.
All right, and so let's go ahead and run the promo for that.
So how does a superhero get ready for a date?
Same as everybody else.
You change one more time, I'm going to shoot you.
We're in our 20s. We should meet people, go on dates.
Aren't you worried about moving too fast?
Catch me if you can.
I will text you. No, I'll call you. Or I'll just do both, okay? I'll do both. I'm so sorry.
You are a crime-fighting, lady-slaying machine.
It's super cool.
Little help, please. There you go again, saving me from that evil dress.
Get in bed.
The Flash, new hit series, Tuesdays at 8, 7 central on the CW.
All right, and if you could do the recap, Gary.
Absolutely. Caitlin takes Barry out to a local karaoke bar to help them both find new loves. Caitlin strikes out, but Barry meets a sports reporter and asks her out for a date. Meanwhile, Cisco considers Hartley's dangerous offer. And the team searches for Shauna, a metahuman with teleportation powers who just busted her boyfriend out of Iron Heights.
And this episode got an average of 8, so above average by our scale. And that's with 4 different scores. And yeah, Gary, you had the highest score for this episode. So what did you love about this one?
I liked a bunch of things. I liked the Caitlin Barry dynamic, and I'm not going to go off on a whole shipper thing about it, but I thought it was very nice, and I liked it. They both seemed very relaxed, and it seemed sort of a natural fit. Anyway, then we get the whole I'll call it budding jealousy, or I'm not sure what it was, but when Iris finds out that Barry is dating this other reporter, you definitely sort of see wheels turning in her head, and it was sort of nice. I don't think it quite reached soap opera levels, but it was still a little sort of teenage angsty love triangle kind of thing, and they introduced it without beating the drum too loud. So well done for that. As far as Cisco falling prey to Hartley's twisting and machinations, I think it's obvious that Hartley is much smarter than Cisco. and got played. And then finally they introduced this sort of the villain of the week, so to speak. And I have to wonder now, how many people do they have in these I forget what they called their holding cells or whatever. Who's feeding them? Who decides that they themselves need to hold them? It seems a little bit much. And honestly, it would strike me that Barry is so much of an ethical person, as well as an actual police officer, that he would have issues with these people being privately detained for an undetermined amount of time. So that's sort of scratching my head as well. But overall, I enjoyed the little twist of Hartley being in this episode, not just confined, thrown into the jail, so to speak. And I enjoyed his manipulations, actually. It's nice to have a thinking villain, regardless of whether or not they have powers. So that for me was a plus. And yeah, karaoke is just karaoke. I can't say more on it than that.
I don't know. She might be worth dealing with the karaoke, but we'll see. Sorry, I've got a thing for Daniel Pennebaker. What a surprise.
Yeah.
Edmund, how about you? Your thoughts on this one?
Yeah. Well, I'll second the Daniel Pennebaker. In my case, it goes all the way back to Shark, the... I guess which hopefully some people remember James Woods as a slick LA attorney from a few years ago. But anyway.
Oh, gee, I forgot about that.
So did a lot of people.
Yes.
So did a
lot. Even while it was on, yes, I know.
But yeah, I did like that dynamic between the two of them, and I'm trying to remember, I can't remember if it was started in this episode or if it was a holdover from last episode when Caitlin made her sort of subtle little play to Barry, and he just sort of walked away. I think that was in the previous episode, so this was a nice follow up to that. Yeah. Also, certainly the care and feeding of the inmates is one of those things that I think just reflects more on the more comic booky aspect of Flash. But certainly becoming a little bit of an issue. But I also did like we've had all these sort of very, much more traditional super villain crazy types, having someone who has these delinquent tendencies, but winds up being granted these powers, and seeing what someone of perhaps a more normal disposition what would happen to them when they get granted these was a nice little variation. I was just amused with the recap of saying Barry asked her on a date, since it was quite obviously the other way around. It was one of those classic cases of here, let me beat you over the head with the fact that I would like to go out with you. Although at least he did have the smarts to follow up on it. Yeah, I mean, I think it. And we've talked about this with Person of Interest some, and anytime you're dealing with a full length season the way they are, that there are going to be those episodes where it is more a villain of the week, just sort of pushing the story along in more incremental ways. You can't have these big arc episodes all the time, and I thought this was a good example of that.
Yeah, it got the job done for what it needed to do, and maybe that question you're asking, Gary, is a really good one in terms of what is Barry overlooking in the name of being overexcited, perhaps, with this whole identity of the Flash and working with Wells. Is he seeing some of the uglier side of Wells in all of this? For that matter, is there something that Wells knows that we don't, that justifies what's going on? We can presume that there must be, but what could it be at this point? Who knows? Yeah, so good choice there. Edmund, how about you? What would be your choice for, shall we say, your wild card?
Yes, let me see. Well, I think we've been spending so much time at the bottom of the list. I think perhaps Gary and I should talk about the one that just missed the top three, Elementary.
All right, and let's go ahead then and run the promo.
Imagine you're him. He took and tortured an innocent girl. Now she's taken up with a renowned detective.
So this is all about you?
Us.
We're looking for a needle in a haystack.
Needles. Say I'm like you think I am. How smart would that make you?
We are playing a guessing game.
I do not guess. Wait.
You want to tell me where you've been?
No.
All right, and Edmund, if you could.
Certainly. Holmes and Watson try to help Kitty when she begins to unravel due to the imminent threat to her safety. Meanwhile, the origin of Sherlock and Kitty's relationship is revealed.
All right, and this one came in, as you alluded, Edmund, at the in the fourth slot at an average of 8.25. So, Yeah, Edmund, what would you say was exceptional about this one?
Yeah, the main thing was, I mean, this was I find it deeply ironic that this was the episode where they finally fill in all of those details about Holmes and Kitty's relationship that they decided to leave as this big mystery, where we were just dropped in, so whatever it was, 6-8 months later from the end of last season, and with Watson on her own, and Sherlock having now returned from London with this Kitty person, and both in terms of the threat they were facing, and sort of all three of them having to come together to combat it, and then getting all of this backstory, it really fleshed out the character, and I think this is a case where it's become sort of very common for shows to say, oh, we're going to respect the audience intelligence, and you know, and not just lay everything out for them, and you know, and people will pick up on the details, and I think now that we've got all of that backstory, I think this is a case where they could have been a little more straightforward and showed us some of this stuff earlier on, perhaps not right at the beginning, but certainly I thought there was some terrific work from Johnny Lee Miller and the actress who plays Kitty, whose name I do not have right in front of me, in terms of showing that relationship and how close Sherlock had come to relapsing, and it's just sort of unfortunate that here we are at what appears to be the end of her part of Kitty's part of the story, and Watson and Sherlock starting to come to some sort of reconciliation, and just at the point when the whole relationship become it's most interesting. But what did you think, Gary?
Well, yeah, I mean, I want to thank them for giving us that payoff and not leaving it some sort of mystery that we didn't know what happened when Sherlock went back. So I'm happy they did that. Yeah, I wish they had dropped a few more clues early, you know, during the course of the season. I think it would have given us more of a payoff for this episode, because we were sort of entering this really with such a blank slate that you couldn't appreciate what they were throwing in front of you as much as you would have if they had teased up to it a little bit more. That being said, Johnny Lee Miller's performance, I thought, in this episode, with not only the sense of his struggle over having to deal with relapsing and going, starting his drug use again, as well as, his sort of taking under the wing of Kitty because he saw that she was sort of a damaged soul as much as he was, and he wanted to try and do something because of his innate goodness, whether we always see it or not, was very touching and very well acted out, I thought. Joan really was playing second fiddle to in this episode, but I thought it was well placed that she should not have had a prominent role, and that she was really sort of our voice in this episode, and it worked out well. You know, she said what we would have wanted to say, or reacted how the viewer would have. So she was very much taking our place as a surrogate during this episode, and it was a good role for her for that. I almost wish I could have seen more, but maybe less was better in this case. If we had seen more of the Holmes Kitty interactions, it might have diluted the impact for what we did see. So part of me wished I seen more interaction, but I have to, as I thought about it more on this episode after I'd watched it, I think they struck the right chord. There was just enough where we had a sense of things without turning the spotlight on it too much. So they gave us enough to understand the references, which was good for me. I felt like they'd really finally gotten the Kitty dynamic worked into the Holmes Watson relationship, and I'm sort of sorry to see her go. I thought it was working well at this point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was certainly part of my disappointment after I'd been so hard on them introducing this character earlier. So I guess that was part of my own mea culpa that guys, you could have gotten me on her side sooner if you just rolled some of this out. You didn't have to do the whole thing, but yeah, so, 'cause I was feeling the same thing. I'm like, oh great, apparently she's being shuffled off now, and just at the point where I'm starting to like the character.
Isn't that usually the way, though? Anyway, let's go ahead then and do a quick rundown of the other shows that were on this week that we did not cover in depth. First up is Grimm, Season 4, Episode 11, Death Do Us Part, which got an average of 8.25. Gary, you gave this actually a pretty high mark. Anything you want to say about Grimm?
Oh, geez, it's really firing on all cylinders for me. This show just keeps getting better and better for me. And, think about it. Not only are we dealing with our Vesson of the Week, we got the nice little thing of Monroe off on his honeymoon from Hawaii or someplace tropical, which was a nice little cameo appearance for them, I guess, contract issue. And we get, Woo's in the thick of things. It's like, oh, yeah, let's go to the trailer. It's very nice. Then we're not only dealing with that, but we're also dealing with, I'm blanking out on her name. Nick's girlfriend.
Juliet.
Yeah, Juliet. Juliet with this, being the Hexen Beast and trying to resolve it. And, definitely sort of hiding from Nick, even though they're sleeping in the same bed. And, but still, trying to, resolve it on her own and not wanting him to know or bring him into it, which is still, I'm still scratching my head over that. Then she went to Renard for help, which did make a certain amount of sense. But we've had issues with Juliet and Renard already, and this would seem like it's just going to inflame things again. So, but a little bit of happiness. We have a problem issue going on. We have the Vesson attack team going in full strength, and everyone seems to be getting along with each other. So it just seems like they've managed to take all the disparate elements that they run through this show, and right now they all seem to sort of be like moving together, working in the same gears, and it's a really nice place for us. We've had so many different sort of distractions or attempts to shake up the formula, I guess you say. Nick's losing his powers, trouble coming in, all these different things that sort of seem to muck up the works, and they're not there right now. Everything seems to be firing and working well, at least for me. I mean, what do you Edmund, do you watch Grimm as no, you don't. John,
no,
you watch Grimm. So I mean, you know what I'm saying? It seems like everything's sort of working together for the first time in a while.
Yeah, it is. And maybe it's because they can finally get past that whole thing of Nick not being a Grimm anymore. And then they kind of got sidetracked with the whole Vesson Ryan and all of that, which I think was actually what started to get it back on track, now that I think about it. But yeah, I mean, right now I'm not having any issues with the show. It seems to be working out pretty well, actually. You gave this a 9, I gave it a 7.5. Really, it was just because I felt like the whole the trope of bringing in ghost hunters as a plot line, because they just used exactly the same characterizations and just changed the names for each show. Because I think I saw these a few years back as the Ghost Facers on Supernatural. So I think they had roughly the same fate at the end of the day. Anyway, let's go ahead then. And we have The 100, Season 2, Episode 11, Coup de Grâce. Brutal consequences are faced by Bellamy and Lincoln. Meanwhile, Abby fights to stay in control, and Jesper confronts President Wallace. Edmund, you gave this one an 8.5.
Mm-hmm. I've been liking the way they've been moving this along. I felt that kind of coming out of the mid-season break, there was a little bit of a rough patch transitioning, but with the way they're building to this assault on Mount Weather, both in terms of the odd alliances outside and the kids inside doing their best anyway to try and bring things along. It's working quite well, and certainly the wind up of Bellamy and Lincoln and Lincoln succumbing to the red again realistic and really throwing a wrench in the work. So just a nicely done little twist.
I will say too that Clark being that badass at the end of the episode,
yes,
that worked. That really worked for me. It's glad. I'm glad to see her so strong in this episode. We also had this week Black Sails, Season 2, Episode 2, 10, or X, as the Roman numeral would imply.
Yes,
Flint offers advice to
Dufresne,
thank you. Silver attempts to make himself indispensable. Eleanor is requested to depose a captain, and Rackham turns ambitious. And yes, boy, the whole thing with Eleanor get ugly.
Yeah. Yeah, no, just when you just when we thought you'd met every type of crazy captain. Yes, we've got a new one for you.
Well, what surprised me with that is, I don't know about you, but the whole time that was going on, the thought was I kept thinking in the back of my head, shoot him. He's posturing. He's wide open. You know, he's basically playing to the audience. And you're close enough that you can be reasonably sure you're going to get a headshot.
Mm-hmm.
If there's one way to undercut any possibility of somebody taking the wrong lesson out of this whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, that is a good point.
Shoot him in the head. You're done.
Yes.
But it's like, you know, because Eleanor was kind of trying to stand up for herself, but yeah, just not going very far. But that's, I don't know. It was just the way that the scene was staged, probably. It just made me think you're kind of not taking care of this problem. But anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Moving on from there, we have 12 Monkeys, Season 1, Episode 3, Cassandra Complex. Cole's search for the location of the virus leads him to 2014. How convenient. And to a devastating moment in Dr. Raley's life involving a dangerous outbreak in Haiti. And this one came in at an average of 7.83, so still going pretty strong for this show mm-hmm. and its first season. Gary, or rather Edmund, again, you gave this one an 8.5.
Yeah, I actually, now that I think about it, in terms of what I was just talking about with Elementary, I like the way, I mean, we're just in the third episode, and the way, and it's kind of natural to the storyline, of course, given the fact that they are jumping around in time. But the way they've set certain things up and are now going back and filling in some of those blanks that were left from just the first couple of episodes, and certainly seeing Rayleigh, finding out just how bad it was for Rayleigh when of course, a lot of people still think she's nuts, but when people thought she's nuts and she was possibly maybe getting to the point of starting to believe them, especially once the epidemic does not turn out to be the epidemic that she feared it was. So I think this is a great example of, you know, yeah, building all these different elements of your story and jumping back and forth, but doing it in a way that you can still, you're still keeping things moving forward, and as well as certainly in the future timeline now, introducing new intriguing little details and elements to fill in later.
Yes. Let's see. Next episode was The Musketeer, Season 2, Episode 3, The Good Traitor. A Spanish general offers to hand over the formula of a unique and deadly gunpowder in exchange for help rescuing his kidnapped daughter. Meanwhile, the Dauphin becomes becomes gravely ill, and Constance risks everything to save him. I swear they say that word about three different ways in every single episode of the show. It throws me off. This one came in at a 7.75. Mm-hmm. So another good episode of The Musketeers. I think I like this one a little bit more than you did, but
the things just played out a little too cliched in a couple of different areas, and Colin Salmon should just be thankful for the witch and supernatural, so he didn't have the worst accent of the week.
Yeah. Really, it's hard to beat that, so there you go. The Vampire Diaries, Season 6, Episode 12, Prayer for the Dying. Liv and Luke try to convince their father to let Joe and Kai take their place in the merge ceremony. Meanwhile, Caroline's plan to cure her mother takes a devastating turn, and Damon's risky plan sends things spiraling out of control just before the merge. I give this one a 7.5. Constantine, Season 1, Episode 11, A Whole World Out There. A group of Ivy League students of Ivy University students yeah, test a disturbing theory in an experiment that goes horribly wrong when they find a way to an alternate dimension where they encounter a maniacal killer. And for I do have to say, this one came in at a 7.5, by the way, but this was a perfect match for the Grimm episode on the exact same night, because it was like playing out two alternative versions of a similar storyline with the, you know, the oddities of shall we say, alternative explanations for ghostly activity or seemingly paranormal activity, shall we say. Of course, in Constantine, that's not much of a problem. Or rather, it is the problem, is that it's paranormal in nature. I like this one quite a bit. Edmund, it looks like you did too. Gary, you came in more average.
Yeah, I actually, it didn't feel like a real Supernatural episode to me. So, I sort of like the more of the occult introduced with my Constantine. So, this seemed to have stripped it away a little bit. Also, some of the characters seemed a little bit blander for this episode. So, I downgraded it just a little bit.
Yeah, fair enough.
And from the news I hear, I shouldn't fall in love with it.
It's so unfortunate because I really feel like this show is much better than the ratings perhaps originally suggested, but be that as it may. Let's see what's next on the list here. The original season 2, episode 12, Sanctuary. Rebecca becomes intrigued by a mysterious girl newly arrived at the insane asylum. Haley struggles with coming clean to Jackson about the secret she's keeping and is surprised when he shares his own secret involving Haley's parents. Klaus tries to stop a marriage ritual that Haley and Jackson must complete. Vincent attempts to uncover Klaus' secret, and Davina discovers that Josh and Marcel are in danger. And I gave this one a 7.5. Star Wars Rebels. Season 1, Episode 12, Vision of Hope. The crew attend a gathering for those who oppose the Empire and learn something unexpected. Gary, we both give this one a 7.5.
Yes, this was the Londo episode, was it?
No, the one that came after that, actually.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. You know, I wish I could say that these are unique enough that they don't sort of blend in after a while. But again, it's staying a little bit more kiddish than I would like it to. My children are rather enjoying it, though. They've been liking this whole series, and from what I tell, this will be in continuity with the newer movies that are coming out as well.
Yes, that's correct. So, yeah, I'm liking it, but it certainly is. You know, there was this news this week, or this implication that we really didn't get to talk about very much, which was that Disney is looking to put together a subscription model for Star Wars and Marvel material going forward. Really messing with the whole broadcast or delivery model. But what comes to mind there, and the reason that I bring it up now, is that just as I have said many times that I don't feel like ratings matter nearly as much to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because it's part of this larger picture of the MCU, and it's really just an ongoing televised publicity campaign, if you will. It's basically keeping the MCU in awareness, even if a lot of people aren't watching it to the same degree that they pay for movie tickets. Same thing may be true for Star Wars Rebels. It doesn't need to knock it out of the park because it's just ongoing awareness.
It's like a placeholder.
Yeah, in a sense, it is. And
Torchbearer?
it keeps the awareness there. It's marketing, really, is what it comes down to. There's storytelling taking place, and in some cases, some very good storytelling. Like, you know, Agent Carter was the number one show this week for us, but at the end of the day, that's not where the big money's being made. So does it matter if Agent Carter gets stellar ratings? Probably not. It's doing well enough for what Disney/ABC wants it to. And that's why you get, like, the ABC network guy saying that, you know, the ratings for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter are perfectly fine from their point of view. It's getting what they want. Even if people DVR it and watch it later, or they binge watch it at some point in the future, to them, it's all the same. It's good. It's all good. It keeps the awareness in the audience of the franchise, the bigger franchise, the mega franchise. So I can see why maybe they're happy with something that is a little less, it doesn't need to be controversial or edgy or really kind of groundbreaking at this point, because it's just to lead or keep the audience happy until episode 7 hits, and then they can kind of maybe play around with things a little bit more. But they're not going to tip their hand on episode 7 now at all. Even if they eventually link up story somehow, I can't see them pulling any triggers until episode 7 on anything major. Let's see, final thing here would be, this show escaped the bottom three by a hair. And that would be Sleepy Hollow, season 2, episode 15, Spellcaster. A warlock who was involved in the Salem witch trials escapes purgatory and finds a book of spells. Meanwhile, Abby struggles to find or to trust Frank again, and Henry has an identity crisis. And as soon as I read that it was going to be about a warlock, I was thinking, hey, Julian Sands showed up on the wrong episode tonight.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. But this one, like I said, came in a little bit below average. Edmund, you and I both gave it average. Brunt's Thumb is 6. I don't know what else to say about it other than the fact that Sleepy Hollow has kind of unfortunately lost a bit of its mojo, and now it's kind of just a very mediocre show lately.
Yeah, and certainly this one was not helped by deciding to venture into Salem territory, which
doesn't that predate him?
Well, at least for once we didn't have Ichabod saying it's like, oh yes, I remember him, I used to have lunch with him at before he went bad. In my case, I basically was giving it a 7 as much for on the promise of some of the stuff that was going on at the end there with them working out the hashing out some of the relationship with Frank, you know, and of course John Noble finally being given something to do, and apparently he's going to run around being really bad and nasty and I hope even more fun.
Maybe so, but
it does not bode well for Fox's Monday nights that its two shows wound up right there sitting almost at the bottom of the list.
Yeah, but ask me if I'm surprised by that, right? We said if you're going to push a show to be kind of more self-contained episodes rather than bigger storylines, this is what happens.
Yeah.
If the show is built around larger storylines, how do you dial back from that?
I'm
not surprised that Fox seems to be dropping the ball a little bit here. All right, any last thoughts on this week, Gary?
One or two things really quick. I continue to think about all the different things we keep hearing about Netflix, about HBO Go, breaking the ties with the cable companies, Disney wanting to start a subscription service. The network model is really falling apart, and it seems like it's falling apart hard and fast.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
It's going to be really odd to see how this plays out, because while I certainly feel like this is well deserved at this point, they kind of got what they asked for. So did we as a larger viewership, because we've been begging cable companies and everyone else to unbundle a lot of this content because it would be quote unquote cheaper. I'll be curious to see if that is what turns out to be the case, because I have a feeling it's going to not turn out to be that way, because everyone is going to section their stuff off so much that everything's going to be like $4.99, $7.99, $9.99, and by the time that you get done,
yeah. Well, it's a
nightmare.
Yeah, and with some of these major services, you know, they're talking about $24.99 a month, and you start adding a few of those together, and you're back at your cable bill.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say, I didn't say it's gonna end up being cheaper for us.
Oh okay.
Oh no, but there are some people who have made that argument for years.
Yes.
So yeah, we'll have to see what it actually turns into when all is said and done.
Yeah, just a quick aside on that. I mean, I think the one that's scaring them the most is that ESPN has started making noises about unbundling ESPN3 from the cable services, and that all the people who want to watch live sports has been one of the main things keeping people on cable. So if that goes, then we may really be in that brave new world.
Hmm. This is true. And essentially, I mean, yes, this whole thing has been falling apart ever since. Not HBO Go so much, although that was a big blow. But when within, what, the same week or so, CBS made a big move.
Mm-hmm.
That hasn't quite proliferated yet. But I would even argue that Hulu, in some respects, was among the first to do this because of the fact that it was funded by a handful of networks. It then found its own kind of niche way of dealing with things. A lot of foreign programming, for instance, but you can go and see NBC shows and Fox shows and CW shows on Hulu the next day.
Yeah.
That's a fairly significant situation right there. Because what, you know, quite frankly, with me, sometimes it's just easier for me to wait the next day than try to cram everything into an evening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's not even using quote unquote, you know, truly alternative means of content distribution. It's using what's out there free. Well, not free, but close to free.
Yeah.
So, or close enough to free. Let's put it that way. Then again, I'm not going to pay the same amount of money or even a fraction of it for just CBS.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly.
So kind of
yeah.
The mark on that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I will say in my case, I mean, I'm still with the cable company, but that's as much because of the, basically the investment in technology I made to set up this computer to be my DVR with, what is it now? Eight terabytes of storage. but just the way that's set up, it has to be through a cable box, or a cable card actually. If the streaming starts really taking off and I can drop that bill and just have my ISP, and have access to everything, right? I don't have to worry about it being recorded and sitting there in the box for me to access if I can just get it out of that infamous cloud. You know, then I will definitely be strongly considering the cord cut finally.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under the Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.